Good morning, everybody, and happy Easter. And although it is purely a coincidence, if you believe in such things, today is also Transgender Day of Visibility. And I encourage you to lift up those folks who are transgender, non-binary, gender stretching, who are part of your life in some way or another. Welcome to First Universalist Unitarian Church. My name is Ian McIntosh, and I am a friend of this congregation. And I want to extend a special welcome to any visitors who join us this morning, either here in this space or online. You are welcome. Since 1858, UU Wausau has served as a vital voice for liberal religion in central Wisconsin. We are an intentionally free society that welcomes all persons just as you are, regardless of age, sexual orientation, ethnicity, economic situation. Wherever you are in your life's journey, know that you belong here in this moment. Between Sundays, we'd love for you to participate, join in one of the events or classes that we have here at the church and at other sites. So be sure to subscribe to the church's newsletter and follow on Facebook or Instagram for updates. As far as announcements, I'd like to highlight just a few here. Let's see, after today's service, everyone and not just families.
There's an adult Easter egg hunt too.
Oh, there's an adult Easter egg hunt too, whoa, okay. Anyway, there is an Easter egg hunt. Unlike a traditional Easter egg hunt though, we work together to find the eggs. This is not a beat out the other person type. And so there are many things that here. You can find the eggs that have been hidden, and once they're all found, then we have treats for every person. Let's see, after the service, please take a flower. Only one per household, please, at least initially. After we hunt the eggs and have coffee, if you'd like to come back and see what's left, that's all right. We are looking for workers and for blood donors for our blood drive that will be held on April 9th. If you can help with either of those things, please check the announcement. I was asked to specifically highlight that although you've been hearing about the auction for a number of weeks, which is on May 4th, we are starting to sell tickets, and you can buy them outside after the service. There was somebody there, I don't know if he's sitting at a table, but you can get your tickets and you will be prepared. I think I've highlighted everything I need to say. So the next step is, let's take a moment, stand if you're able, and let's extend signs of peace and welcome to one another. And now, as you are finding your way back to your seats, wasn't that a fun thing? Let's gather our hearts and our minds. Let's be present in this moment as we join together in reciting the chalice lighting, which you'll find in your bulletin right there. Valuable things aren't often found lying around. Diamonds and gold are rare. The holy is not easy to find. The truth is never easy to put your hands on. And yet people find treasure. They find the holy in reality. And the footsteps of truth's seekers echo through eternity. We light this flame in honor of those who find, by never giving up the search. And now I invite you to turn in your gray hymnal to number 203, where you'll find all creatures of the earth and sky, and then let's stand in body or spirit and sing together.
Thank you. This morning, I'd like to share with you a story about a grumpy Easter bunny. Once upon a time, there was a bunny headed to church on Easter Sunday. Not the Easter bunny, but a bunny on Easter nonetheless. And unlike the Easter bunny, this bunny was cranky and grumpy. He didn't like anyone or anything except for his extensive gardens. His warren was surrounded by them, and there were always fresh-cut flowers in his burrow. In fact, the only reason he was heading to church on Easter morning was to collect his Easter lily that he got every year. He grumbled the whole walk to church. The sun was shining too bright, it hurt his bunny eyes. The birds were chirping too loud, it hurt his bunny ears. And the breeze was blowing too much, it ruffled his bunny tail. He continued his grumbles at church. He griped when he found someone had placed his name tag in the R's instead of the B, for bunny, of course. And he complained loudly when he had to sit at the back of the sanctuary because another bunny family had taken his spot by the front in the flowers. He tapped his bunny foot through the story, the nerve. He had heard it before. He mumbled under his breath and kept checking his pocket watch through the sermon. The bunny minister was talking way too much and taking way too long. He huffed with every hymn they had to sing. Surely one would have been enough. And after service was done, the grumpy bunny worked his way through groups of laughing and visiting bunnies, complaining very loudly that church would be so much nicer if it wasn't for all the other bunnies. He finally made it to the front of the sanctuary, only to realize it had taken so long that he was now in a very long line for flowers. So in line he waited, muttering under his breath. He saw bunny after bunny walking by with lilies of their own. With each one, his grumbles got louder and louder, and he grew more and more impatient. And finally, when he was second in line, he could see there was just one lily left. He could not risk not getting his lily, and so with no more patience, he skipped around the bunny that was next in line, grabbed the last lily, and headed straight for the door, eager to get back to his warren. But just as he was about to leave, the grumpy bunny was caught in the middle of a litter of little bunnies playing with the new ball they got in their Easter basket. One little bunny leapt to catch the ball, falling right into the grumpy bunny and his lily hard. The lily went up, and the lily came down, landing with a thud, and was promptly run over by the defensive line. "My lily!" the grumpy bunny yelled. "Sorry, it was an accident," the little bunny who had landed on him said. It was quickly joined by a chorus of sorries from the other little bunnies. "That was my lily, the last lily," the grumpy bunny protested. And as he huffed and puffed, trying to salvage what he could, the unmistakable scent of Easter lily wafted up, and with it came a memory from when he was just a little bunny playing ball in the garden. He couldn't have been much older than those little bunnies. He was playing baseball with his friends, and he went deep to make the game-saving out. He leapt, and landed on his mom's daylilies, crushing them. He cried as he showed his mother what had happened to her flowers, and his mom asked him to take a deep breath in to see what he could smell. He took a nice, deep, gentle breath, and the air was filled with the scent of daylilies. I invite you to join me in taking a nice, gentle breath to smell our flowers this morning. His mom told him that was the smell of forgiveness, because forgiveness is the scent that flowers give when they've been trampled on. His mom told him that she knew it was an accident and that the flowers would grow back, and gave him a big hug. And he was remembering how great his mother's hugs were when he felt a small tug on his vest. He looked up and saw the little bunny who had crushed his lily was handing him a paper flower they had made during church and said, "We really are sorry about your flower, Mr. Bunny." The grumpy bunny took in one last deep inhale of the lily and took the paper flower and said, "It's okay. I have one I like much better now." In Christian traditions, the white lily represents hope, new beginnings, and the resurrection of Jesus. And in this story, it's a reminder that on this Easter Sunday, we can choose to act with kindness, grace, hope, and love, even if we were a grumpy bunny yesterday. And that is our story for today. Since we are worshiping as an all-ages community today, I invite you to bless everyone here and those joining us online with our children's song. The words are printed in your order of worship.
I'd like to invite everyone to join me in a spirit of prayer and meditation. If you're comfortable, go ahead and uncross your legs if they're crossed and put your feet both flat and firm on the ground. If you'd like to close your eyes, now is a good time to close them. Now bring all of your attention into your body. Focus where there may be tension, perhaps in your jaw or your shoulders or your stomach. Over the next two deep, gentle breaths, try to let some of that tension out. Breathe in and out. Breathe in and out. Let us pray. Let go. Let it all go except when you can't. Living in the present is a nice theory. Except when you are in pain. Except when you can't quiet the cravings that are killing you. So let's bless that tension, the push-pull of wanting to let go, sometimes needing to let go, and also needing to hold on. Sometimes it feels like a better person wouldn't be like this, that they don't get so worked up over their hopes and fears and expectations and disappointments and anger. And so blessed are we when we yearn for connection and love and touch and forgiveness. Blessed are we when we hunger for the beauty of life and the people to fill it. Blessed are we when we are unable to say, I'm letting go, because we feel like we'll be washed away into irrelevancy. Teach us to hold on to the truths that brighten our spirits and fill our souls, and loosen our grip on the painful untruths, like that we are alone, or unlovable, or unworthy. Teach us to hunger for what is good and to be filled. There will be no easy addition and subtraction. We will lose and we will gain, and almost none of it will make much sense at the time. And so it forces our hands open. And the rise and fall of wins and losses, comings and goings, we look for love in the mystery of it all. The stubbornness of flowers that burst forth from frozen ground. And the need for small reminders that the pain of it all, the absurdity of it all, it keeps us wide awake. And now let us call to mind all the joys and sorrows in our lives, and let us meditate on them in silence together now. Amen. Please stay seated for our prayer hymn in the gray book, number 266, Now the Green Blade Riseth.
We all have so many needs, 1,000 needs that really only have one answer, only need one answer, and that is that the world will not be indifferent. So may we live and be with each other in ways that show this truth, whatever each day brings, that we are not indifferent. Whether you give as the plate is passed or whether you give online, you are supporting the ministries of UU Wausau. You may visit the website uuwausau.org to make a one-time collection or recurring gift. And we thank you.
This morning's reading comes from the Gospel according to Mark. This is the oldest of the canonical Gospels. I always feel like it's written with a real sense of urgency. Mark writes, "And when the Sabbath was past, Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of James and Salome, bought spices so they might go and anoint Jesus. And very early on the first day of the week, they went to the tomb when the sun had just risen. And they were saying to one another, 'Who will roll away the stone for us from the door of the tomb?' And they looked up, and they saw that the stone was already rolled back, and it was very large. And entering the tomb, they saw a young man sitting on the right side, dressed in a white robe, and they were amazed. And he said to them, 'Don't be amazed. You seek Jesus of Nazareth, who was crucified. He is risen. You won't find him here. See the place where they laid him. But go, tell his disciples and Peter that he is going before you to Galilee. There you will see him, just as he told you.' And they went out, and they fled the tomb, for trembling and astonishment had come upon them, and they said nothing to anyone, because they were afraid." Therein ends our reading. So in February 1984, in the month and year of my birth, the number one song on Billboard's Hot 100 for nearly 3 weeks was Culture Club's masterpiece, Karma Chameleon. From their second album, if you're wondering, Color by Numbers, which critics say, and I agree with them, is one of the 1,001 albums you must hear before you die. Now, the song's meaning, especially its first line, desert lovin' in your eyes all the way, has endured for decades as one of humankind's greatest mysteries, right up there with the lost city of Atlantis. Thankfully for us, the band's frontman, Boy George, he recently solved this mystery by explaining that the song, quote, is about the terrible fear of alienation that people have. The fear we have standing up. It's about trying to suck up to everybody. Basically, Boy George explains, if you aren't true, if you don't act like you feel, then you get karma justice. That's nature's way of paying you back, end quote. So let me quickly say that Westerners, even well-meaning ones, have mangled the concept of karma. Boy George is one of those people. But that is okay, because what he's saying is still true. And because the song is a total banger, as the kids these days say. The song is about fear, which ChatGPT told me yesterday afternoon is one of our era's defining characteristics. Martin Luther King Jr. had very similar thoughts. In the I Have a Dream speech, King said, one of the greatest challenges we face is overcoming fear and standing up for what's right. He declared in that speech that we must build walls of courage to hold back the floods of fear. We have to fight the fear in us that says, don't stand up, stay quiet, seek popularity more than authenticity, don't act like you feel, be a suck up. But before I get ahead of myself, happy Easter, by the way. I love Easter, I love it. It's my third favorite holiday after Thanksgiving and St. Louis Cardinals opening day. An infamous Mason family Easter memory I'll share with you comes from when I was 6 years old. My parents had just divorced. And so my dad, now a single father, took me and my sister Easter egg hunting back when people hunted for actual boiled eggs. Any of you hunt for actual boiled eggs for Easter eggs? Does anybody even do that anymore? Anyways. And they were also like hand-painted or tie-dyed because my parents did a lot of drugs in the 60s. But anyways, you were there, you remember. They were these hand-painted eggs, and do you remember the little shrink wrap things that like would go around the eggs? Anyways, I was hunting for these hard-boiled eggs. And so on the drive home, for reasons I still need to talk to my therapist about, I put all of the eggs that we had collected under the mat of the back seat of my dad's car. And then quietly, without drawing any attention to my father's eyes in the rearview mirror, I then smashed all of the eggs into the floorboard of my dad's car. Of course, my dad was like, Brian, where on earth did you put the eggs? And of course, I lied. I said, I left them on a park bench, Dad. And he was like, okay, whatever. So the next morning, my hardworking dad left early for work to discover nearly 24 smashed and rotting eggs under the floor mat in the back seat of his Dodge Omni. He came back in and he said, who did that? And I said, my little sister did it. Because I am the living embodiment of a karma chameleon. Which brings me back to this morning's topic, Easter. So, Easter really begins just a couple of days before Sunday. It begins on Thursday. And so like a lot of churches, even many Unitarian Universalist churches, they celebrate this special Thursday, which is called Maundy Thursday. Not Monday Thursday, Maundy Thursday. Now, mandi is a word that originates from the Latin mandatum, which means command. It can also mean order. And so Maundy Thursday, whenever you celebrate it, what it does is it recounts the Last Supper when Jesus gathered with his wishy-washy and his fair-weather friends for a meal. And then at the end of that meal, if you remember, he got up from the table, he tied a towel around his waist, and he washed the feet of the disciples. And after all that was done, he gave them and every inheritor of his ministry a new mandatum. A new commandment. And what was it? Love. Jesus Christ's greatest command is that we love one another. And so the story from there then progresses from the Last Supper to the terrifying crucifixion and then to the resurrection, which presents a difficulty, admittedly, for any rationalist thinking person. And if you doubt it, you are in good company. Because even Jesus' own disciples doubted it. And if those disciples were anything like us, they probably thought they were hallucinating or that someone had spiked the punch. And we know that they doubted it because Thomas later became known as what? Doubting Thomas. He said what whenever he saw Jesus who was risen? He said, "Let me see your scars." And it was only after he looked and the other disciples looked and they placed their hands upon Jesus' scars that Thomas and the rest finally recognized him. They finally accepted him. It was only then that they believed. Before they made sense of it all, Jesus vanishes again. And they were left with all those same things we are left with when someone we love dies. Memories and wishes and hopes. So what I want to draw your attention to this morning is to the scars, because the scars are significant. They're significant because they tell a larger story, that resurrection isn't a reversal, resurrection is a return. I'm going to say that again. Resurrection is not a reversal, resurrection is a return. Just think with me of all the wounds that we carry, even all the things that have gotten better, even if we recover, even if time smooths the rough edges, our wounds never totally go away. If you were a kid who got bullied on the playground, you're kind of always a kid who got bullied on the playground. If you used sex to feel worthy, that reality lingers. If the cancer goes away, its former presence follows. If your parents split way back when you were a little kid, you're still a kid whose parents split. If you said something mean while driving a minivan full of kids to Disney World, you will always be that person. And those things leave marks. And so Jesus showed his friends his scars because he knew that he would be known by those wounds. As Saint Beyonce of Destiny's Child sings, quote, "Kiss my scars because I love what they made." It's a great line, mostly because it's true. There's something amazing about our woundedness because we know we're in the presence of true love or true friendship when we discover that we no longer have to hide our pain or hide our fear. So there's this very smart young person in my life who has asked to remain anonymous. This young anonymous person once told me after I tried to investigate the source of their sadness with 10,000 questions and a mini sermon or two, this person finally interrupted me and saved me from myself saying this, quote, "All I really want you to say is that you're sorry I feel like this." That's all they wanted, for me to see their wounds and accept them and not leave. Scars are the lasting marks of our healing, and they can be both physical and emotional. I have this scar right here under my eyebrow. No one try to touch it in the receiving line or I will swat your hand, but I have a scar right here under my eyebrow from a very well-landed punch in the fifth grade. And I have another one on my leg from an accident. I have scars from being a kid whose parents divorced. I have scars from jobs I never got, from dreams that never came true. The amazing things about the scars we carry as healers of pain and trauma have discovered is that everything that has happened to you has happened to your body. Every act of violence, every moment of pleasure, every hateful thing we have said or had said to us, it happened to these bodies. Every kindness, every sorrow, and every moment of laughter. This is why so many of us live with fear. We live with fear because our bodies wear it. It's not just that I fear something in my head. It's that I physically wear my imposter syndrome. I wear the fear that I will fail at some worthy venture, the fear that I will succeed in some shameful pursuit, fear that I will not have enough time to do what I must, fear that I will be hurt or that I will do the hurting, fear that I might not know love one day, fear that my love will be painful, fear that the things that I most believe in will not be so, fear that I'm untrustworthy, or fear that my friends are untrustworthy. Every one of us at some point or another is a hostage to fear. But the message of Easter resists this fear. Now don't get me wrong, the promise of Easter doesn't say that we'll be cleansed from all harm and we'll be cleansed of all fear. The bad things we've done or that have happened to us will not be erased. Resurrection is not some magical mystery that allows us to edit our past or forget what happened or gloss over injustice. I certainly wish that's how it worked, but it's not. The Nobel Prize-winning writer Alexander Solzhenitsyn, he touched on this in his great book, The Gulag Archipelago, and in it he said this, quote, "Fear and good and evil passes not through states, but right through every human heart. It is impossible to expel it from the world in its entirety, but it is possible to constrict it within every person." And that's precisely what Easter is all about. It's about constricting and making smaller the fear that lives in each of us. If you want a living, breathing example of what we're talking about, I invite you to go to a recovery meeting and see people who have turned darkness and fear into joy and fellowship. Talk to survivors of abuse who have escaped it and found the strength to offer their stories to others as roadmaps to freedom. These are resurrection stories, and they happen every day to everyday people like us. One of the ways I like to think about resurrection is as a story that reveals the way God comes toward humankind. And all those things that happened to Jesus' body, the sham trial, the state-sanctioned violence, the flogging, the mocking, getting spit on, the crucifixion, the scars of all that were still there when the stone of the tomb rolled away. And while it's still true that he still bore the marks of the pain is not what defined him. What defined him was the wisdom and compassion of his ministry that scattered outwards into the world. So one of my friends, a fellow preacher, put it, quote, "Like the oak that crashes and shatters in the forest, small seeds of the original, small imprints of the whole, carried into tiny words and memories, charged with the full power of the original, and picked up by the winds of time and history." And a question might be, so what then was picked up by these winds of time and history? A ministry that shared meals with all the wrong people. A ministry that resisted the forces that seek to dehumanize disabled bodies and queer bodies, uneducated people, poor people, black and brown and immigrant and mentally ill people. Was a resurrection that testified to the forces that try to keep us in the tombs of fear we carry, that we carry in our souls and in our bodies. And it does this so that we can say no, so that today our fear might be just a little bit smaller than yesterday's, because love is stronger think it's a question worth asking every Easter. What if God isn't what we think? What if God doesn't fit the criteria we've used to reject or accept the divine? What if God isn't a punishment and reward system? What if the only reliable way we know God isn't through religion at all, but through a person with wounds, a person who hurts, a person who is still trying to figure it out? You can say what you want to about Easter, but the fact of Christ's humanity is meant to speak to our humanity. And so maybe what I'm trying to say is that resurrection isn't just about a miracle that happened 2,000 years ago. It's not about perfection either, nor is it about achieving the unattainable. If you reduce resurrection to a lack of pain or setbacks, then my guess is you probably haven't experienced it. Because the core of the idea is all about pain and setbacks. How our scars and sorrow and fear will always play a role in our story, but they never have to control the direction. And so even when you feel trapped by pain, by your history, by the fear of alienation, by the fear to stand up, by a fear that you have to pretend to be someone you're not, and that you're trapped in all this fear as if it were a grave, remember, resurrection is real. And stones roll away. Hallelujah and amen. Let us now rise and sing our closing hymn, number 61, Lo, the Earth Awakes Again. If you'll receive this blessing, I invite you to reach out, take the hand of the person you came with or someone nearby. If you're here alone, reach out with your heart. May the truth that sets us free, the hope that never dies, the love that casts out fear, lead us forward together until the day spring breaks and all shadows flee away. Relax, have a seat, take all these flowers, please. See you in a moment.